Welcome to the Center Church Podcast. This is Kate, and I have Jeremy with me.
Sitting in a much taller chair than the one that you're sitting in.
I do wish that we had video sometimes. I think it would be a lot more entertaining for people. Or not.
It would be Kate and some...
And Jeremy's torso and legs.
That's right. You have no idea how much taller this chair is.
Today we're talking about how to be people of justice in complex times. And this is going to be a topical, although I'm certain Jeremy will find a way to fit a lot of Ecclesiastes into it, right?
Absolutely, I will. I mean it when I say I would happily go through Ecclesiastes again. I found it that interesting.
I'm going to start out by reading out of the book of Isaiah, chapter 56. Thus says the Lord, keep justice and do righteousness, for soon my salvation will come and my deliverance be revealed. Blessed is the man who does this, and the son of man who holds it fast, who keeps the Sabbath, not profaning it, and keeps his hand from doing any evil. Let not the foreigner who has joined himself to the Lord say, the Lord will surely separate me from his people. And let not the eunuch say, behold, I am a dry tree. For thus says the Lord, to the eunuchs who keep my Sabbaths, who choose the things that please me and hold fast my covenant, I will give in my house and within my walls a monument and a name better than sons and daughters. I will give them an everlasting name that shall not be cut off. And the foreigners who join themselves to the Lord to minister to him, to love the name of the Lord and to be his servants, everyone who keeps the Sabbath and does not profane it and holds fast my covenant, these I will bring to my holy mountain and make them joyful in my house of prayer. Their burnt offerings and their sacrifices will be accepted on my altar, for my house shall be called a house of prayer for all peoples. Verse 8. The Lord God, who gathers the outcasts of Israel, declares, I will gather yet others to him besides those already gathered. So we want to talk a little bit today about some issues in a topical way of how to respond in complex times as a people who love the gospel and want to live out the gospel to their entire community. I wanted to bring up a few things, and I think Jeremy has some notes as well, on how we can look at what is going on right now and not be silent observers of it, but be people of action in it.
We also felt it would just be useful because not for us to, you know, provide this precise roadmap, but for us to engage in conversation over the reality that we are aware that you, we know as a part of our church, we know you care deeply about those who are oppressed, about those who are disenfranchised. We know that there's, many voices that are sounding out in all kinds of ways around this. And so we just wanted to, you know, of course, in our home, we've been talking about it and thinking about it. And we wanted to, offer, you know, think out loud, I guess, in front of you and offer some insights that we have that you're welcome to begin to, like, wrestle through yourselves on this. Because we know that, like, there are all kinds of challenges, I think, about, okay, so exactly how do I respond to this thing that I read concerning, you know, writing? Or I am proud to be protesting, but how do I interact with my colleague who thinks that there is something, who also claims Christianity, but would make arguments against protesting, say, or something like that? I mean, these are not easily solved issues, and so we want to just try to touch on those and support you in those as much as we can as you're having conversations in your center communities, you know, this week over that. Is that kind of where you're at, Kate?
Yeah, I think that's great, Jeremy. And I wanted to start with the idea that this is a conservative liberal issue, because it seems to be that that's a dividing line. I know a lot of people live out, they choose their political stance based on their values and their faith, and that's like an outflowing of that. But I just want to encourage anybody who's feeling that way to take a step back and analyze, am I confusing my particular politician for my God or for my values? And know that, like, when your values lie, at the heart of your values lies the gospel and Christ, then there's not, you don't need to feel offended when a politician that you chose to vote for or not vote for comes under fire.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I want to make sure I understand fully what you're saying there, but I think as I hear that, what I hear is that I hope that some of the things we're addressing today are able to transcend, or to frame it differently, to go deeper than, you know, mere politics. I mean, we're both aware that all of these things manifest themselves in political realities, right? So who you vote for and the policies that you support and the programs that you support are these very, like, I think, you know, real representations of the things you value, therefore your kind of moral value system and so on. But I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but just to make sure I understand fully what you're saying. What you're saying is that deeper than that is this affirmation of the gospel, of Christ, of what that means for how we look at other people and how we think about ourselves. And regardless of your political positioning, that is where we really need to begin. So we're going to, I think, try to speak to our current moment, but also be refraining back to the heart of the matter, which is Christ, you know, lived out in the body.
I think basically that's a good way to put it. What I was trying to say, maybe unsuccessfully, was that we should not decide our position on these issues based on how our political party is coming out on it.
Right. No, that was successful. I probably was okay.
You know. Maybe we were both unsuccessful.
Yeah. So this is a good talk, everybody.
So I want to talk a little bit about property destruction.
Right.
With the writing and everything.
There's the transition.
Yep. There it is. It's a hard transition. I have heard arguments for and against it. And I think what it comes down to for me is, if we look at it simply as an outlet for people's anger, it's problematic. When you look at Mark 11, and this is what I'm basing my opinion on, the story Mark 11 that also appears in Matthew and Luke, of Jesus turning over the tables. I think a couple of things to take from this story are, yes, he was angry. So yeah, if you're angry, like, not all anger is wrong. Some is just anger. Some is being angry at the same things that make God angry. And so the Isaiah verse that I read earlier, something that Jesus quotes when he's doing this, saying, like, there has to be room for all nations, there has to be space, and in one of the sermons that we recommended last week by Pastor Crump, he mentions that it was an oppressive practice to keep the Gentiles out of the temple, of the only area that they were going to be allowed into, as they were segregated into this area, and it was full of commerce and industry. And it's not that Jesus was speaking out against commerce and industry and finding a way for people to not have to carry their sacrifices with them throughout the entire long trip. It was that there was no room for all the nations that were meant to be allowed into the temple. And so Jesus's anger at this was reflecting God's anger at this. And it was not, here's my first point, it was not an indiscriminate anger. It was a purposeful anger. Mm. And I think as I'm speaking about this, I think it applies more to more than just property destruction. I think it applies to any anger that you might be feeling right now over any of these issues, the unjust treatment of, you know, yourself or other people. So it's not an indiscriminate anger, it's purposeful. He had purpose behind it. It was planned. It was controlled. It had a target. It had a beginning and an end. It didn't escalate to encompass more than what his purpose was for it. And so I think when we think about our own anger at injustice and our own heartbreak and our own our own feelings about it, first of all, remember, like, we can be active, we can take action, but let us discriminate in that action and choose something purposeful and missional, and let it be controlled and targeted, and let it be addressing the right issues and the right people. And I guess that, you know, that's what I mean by not indiscriminate. Let's not hurt more people than have already been hurt.
Right.
I do, you know, it dovetails a little bit with, and so this is somebody that I quoted prior, I think, in this last series that we've been in for so long. So Nicholas Wolderstorff's book, Justice, some of you might remember this, he coins the phrase the quartet of the vulnerable, and he underscores the gospel, Christ's interests in caring for the poor, the foreigner residing within our borders, the orphan, and the widow, and this is informed in part by Zechariah chapter 7, verses 9 and 10. I want to read that because I think it's a powerful text. This is what the Lord Almighty said: administer true justice, show mercy and compassion to one another. Do not oppress the widow or the fatherless, the foreigner or the poor. And so, to your point, Kate, or your kind of initial observation, I think there's a lot that's like given here, and I think there's actually these are incredibly, I think, encouraging. This is an encouraging command, an ethical. You know, we're given this ethical impetus to do this work, and to observe in a thoughtful and, as Kate said, purposeful way what needs to be done right here in Springfield. I mean, there's so much justice and good that God has eagerly equipped us for, and that's something I want to really just encourage our community in. You know, at Center, we believe that God stands against injustice, oppression, violence. I mean, these should be very obvious things that need not be said, but maybe the thing that really needs to be said is God has organized a universe where he has actualized all of us, equipped all of us to go out and do good work. And by observing Christ, it actually should be, if we are reading the Christ of you know, the Gospels of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, that Christ talked about in Paul, you know, we're going to be excited to go out and engage meaningful causes and step into the fray. And that means sometimes being wrong, and we'll sometimes, you know, like, having to change our way of thinking. We may get to that. But I guess what I'm getting at is that I want to tell you that as a body, as a church community, there is much good to do, and more than enough to fill a lifetime. And so I don't know. I guess that's what it looks like when I don't have anything to add to your point. but I think that's the purposeful part, right? Like,
yeah.
You want to be like, to me, I've been refraining back to this again and again. Mature Christianity demands thoughtful, intentional interaction with injustice. And we've been talking about this for 9 months, you know, in Ecclesiastes. Like, that's what mature faith looks like. And it requires way more work, frankly, than reacting. And it certainly does not look like chaos or random arbitrary reactions. It's not that. It's much more intentional and much more it's much more of a commitment, I guess, is what I'm getting at than that.
Absolutely.
I don't know, does that make any sense at all? I don't know.
Yeah, and something you said made me think of
Bailey reminded me you can fast forward through the sections where I'm speaking As you all listen. If you need to do that
30-second fast forward button.
I'm aware that that's happening. Go ahead.
So I think one question is, like, I see some things on the internet and different things like that of people saying, you know, like, it's absolutely wrong to treat somebody differently because of the color of their skin. And I appreciate the message, and I acknowledge, and I think it's true. But ultimately, what it comes down to is I don't think that we're not coming up against, like, this outright racism. And I think while that absolutely, it still does exist, and a lot of people encounter it, what I think society at large is talking about right now is not that outright, like, acknowledged racism. It is white silence and white indifference in the face of issues that Black people and people of color have been trying to bring to the national attention for longer than we've even been alive. And so I think that you've heard this term institutionalized or systemic racism. And these are issues that, while I think it's important to talk about, we are not even able to cover everything in this podcast because it contributes to the justice system and policing and incarceration and sentencing. So it's in our justice system, it's in our educational system, it's present in our banking system on different levels and in different ways. And a lot of people want to know a lot more about that because you hear the term, but you don't quite know exactly what it means. And if it's true, it would be our responsibility to do everything that we can to fight against that and to counteract that. And so I would just say, because we can't cover all of that in this particular podcast, I would say just, I'm going to use Jeremy's term, be a completist as much as you can. So read as much as you can about it. Not just information that reinforces where your heart already is on it, because I would, as I have found myself at times, and I would suspect maybe many of you are, your heart already knows kind of which direction you're leaning on it, whether it exists or not. So,
or even like the degree to which it exists in one system,
yes,
and not another.
That's a great point.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, historically, and I know you've said this, like, there's no debate that there's, mm-hmm, been, you know, there is clearly, I mean, I suppose there may be some debate, but, like, clearly, historically, there is institutional racism.
Right.
I think much of the debate is, like, what it looks like now, where it shows up, where it's been, mm-hmm, addressed well, where it's not been addressed at all. Those are kind of the I'm sorry, I think I might have interrupted you, Kate. I'm sorry. But
you did.
I think those are the complexities that you're framing.
No, that's fine. I appreciate that. And so I think what I was saying was just make sure that you give it a complete treatment and don't just read, like, the best find information that reinforces the best argument for your own beliefs, like, whichever way you're leaning, so that when you get in a conversation with somebody else about it and you like to share information, you don't draw a blank and say, well, I just think it does exist. Like, make sure that you know the best argument for your views, but know the best argument for other people's views as well. So make sure that you fully understand the topic and treat it. If the issue before was that a lot of white people were living in a white bubble, basically an echo chamber. So if that was the issue before and you don't want that for yourself anymore, don't recreate it in a new way by only learning the best argument for your own beliefs. Mm-hmm. But make sure that you're hearing out to a certain extent and learning as much as you can.
Yeah, I think that is a, you know, the term for that, of course, again, you know, I know that sometimes I feel like, you know, our community is such different places. I know many of you have thought through this very deeply. Like, the term for what you're suggesting is steel manning, right? Like, this is to read the most, I have to underscore the reading part, right? A podcast is a great opportunity to come across a key thinker, a public intellectual, a scholar, but then we really do have to go to their published work, because that's where we're able to engage their ideas in the fullest. And it is not only, I think, an act of, you know, so 1 Peter chapter 2, 17, verse 17 says to honor everybody. Remember to honor everybody. And I was so frankly puzzled by that, that I like, I did, you know, some appropriate exegetical work, and I'm like, okay, so do they mean everybody here? Yeah, like, as far as I can tell, this is a passage that means everybody. And so what does it mean in part to honor everybody? And let me talk about a little bit about what this means. I think on the one hand, it means to, and it's what Kate has highlighted, I think, most directly in the last couple of weeks. It's what many of you are mourning and, you know, working through at a personal level and then within your communities. It, to honor everybody means to affirm that we all carry the Imago Dei, that we all carry God's image. It means to take care of those who can't take care of themselves, speak out for those who can't speak out for themselves, and so on. But also to honor everybody means to think about right now, I mean, as you're processing, you know, our conversation, right? Like, think about those people that you know that you're like, I cannot believe that she holds that view. I cannot believe that in light of all that's been going on, he still thinks this. I mean, like, those individuals, I mean, if you want to uplift the oppressed, and as Zechariah says, as Kate was reading in Isaiah, if you want to bring in the foreigner, right? If you want to, like, do good, you want those people on board. And also, by the way, for their own sake. I mean, we want people who are not thinking clear-headedly, who are not thinking well about a thing, to think clear-headedly about a thing, to be moved toward, closer and closer toward Christ's likeness, which not only helps fundamentally, like, transforms them, but helps everybody in their orbit and everybody that they're going to impact. So part of the role, I think, again, Kay, just kind of, I suppose, expanding on what you're saying, but part of the role of, like, steel manning, of being a completist, of reading broadly, is that you are equipping yourself to be the mature representation of Christ, someone who is able to bring in voices that may stand in opposition to you and meaningfully engage them at, like, directly, like kind of the core of their being, who they are. And this is by, you know, this is not like some magical thing. This is like the wrestling through of ideas. And it begins to reshape them. It humbles and reshapes us. And hopefully it aligns people closer to the values promoted in Christianity. I keep feeling like after I'm done saying a thing, it's no longer making sense.
I love everything you're saying.
Okay. Well, I can't, you know, I really can't tell. I can't tell if that's sarcasm.
So
I don't know. I think that's, you know, is that, I think that's in line with what
yeah,
you're
and some of you may be thinking right now, okay, I want to read. I want to learn more. I don't know where to start. You can reach out to me or Jeremy, and we can share with you our reading lists. In no way will it be complete because, again, there's gaps in our knowledge as well, and we're still learning a lot about a lot of things. But we'd be happy to share a list of the things that we've been looking into and reading. We're both kind of data-minded, so we like to do a lot of research. So if you're interested later on this week, don't hesitate to reach out to us and ask, you know, do you have a short list of some of the things that you found interesting on the subject? And we'll do our best to help you out. But the responsibility is on each one of us individually to learn the things that we need to learn and to fill in gaps in our knowledge.
Yeah, I guess I would only add to what Kate's saying is, like, don't lose a lot of time. You know, if there's, I don't know how much noise there really is out there on this. And by noise, I simply mean, like, voices that are really not expert, that have not really not done the work. But I would encourage you to lean into expertise and lean into, like, scholarship as much as you're able. And in that way, and again, I Kate said it so well, like, you know, we want to be very, like, it's not even about humility. We just want to be honest about the fact that, like, well, we've read on these topics. I mean, we're not experts on these topics.
Right.
So, like, we've read some of the, I think, more important authors and voices on these topics, and we'll talk with any of you about those. But I don't know that you need another, like, reading list via podcast. There's a lot of recommendations out there. If you're like, we really want to know what, like, Kate read, cool, like, then reach out. I mean, that's why we are talking to our community here, right? But I would not lose a lot of time in the noise of, like, the endless articles, like, that kind of, like,
yeah,
you know, like, that bottomless bucket of, and, like, you finish reading that, like, long post, and you're like, who is this, and what meaning, like, have they done any primaries? Yeah, like, what have they actually done in this? But I don't know, that's maybe getting too wonky.
No, I'd say, like, you know, there's like a succinct comment on Twitter that can hit really hard and make you think and feel, but in the long run, is that doing the work?
Right, like, that's maybe not a bad thing. Maybe that's a good catalyst, but the, like, but the more sustained response, right, is then to say, okay, that is catalyzing me to engage in, like, meaningful, long-term investment. And yes. I think, Kate, you're going to be getting to
No, I definitely think there are that, just, sure. like, so many thinkers who this is their life's work, bringing these issues to light and thinking really well and really hard about them. And so I just want to encourage people to lean into those authors and those activists and those thinkers and scientists even, mm-hmm. and get a lot of information from them and filter that through. You know, I wanted to talk a little bit about, and this will apply to some of our congregation, and that is the sense of guilt that some people may be feeling right now, because I think guilt, it's famous for causing a reaction. Like, guilt will make you act like nothing else. And it's good for that reason, but not quite the same thing as repentance, which Jeremy has definitely talked about before over the years, probably back in 2014.
Yeah.
I don't know, something like that. The notes are out there somewhere. But talking about, like, how do we begin to walk back and move in the other direction from where we were heading? And for some of us, this is definitely pertinent information. And a lot of the concern that I think I've felt myself and that has been brought to light is this word performative. Anything that people are doing right now in light of this kind of shift in our national consciousness feels performative, and therefore you maybe don't want to do it. And I would say...
Or maybe they're doing it and have these, like, internal kind of debates going on. Conflict. Or because... What I'm also observing, like, you know, in conversation with a few folks, like, well, because, like, I believe in this thing that I posted, mm-hmm. said, whatever, but because there is so much, like, I don't know how to, like, you know, you want to respect those involved, and therefore you don't want to cheapen people's experience, by engaging in any kind of, like, performative, like, media content. Therefore, like, you have these internal debates. And, like, I get that. I mean, I'm sure that's super, super challenging.
And I just want to say that any action or reaction that you might take right now may feel performative, and it may look performative, and maybe that is just a feeling that we can sit in and do it anyway. Because when you do something and tell other people you're doing it, or do something publicly is probably a better way to put it, it's almost unavoidable that it's going to seem like something that you're doing only because you suddenly feel triggered by this guilt. So just let your actions over time reflect your stated beliefs. If you're stating that this is important to you and that you're committed to doing the work, but you just started doing the reading or you just started having the conversations, that... over time, I think it will feel less performative and more a daily action that you take and just part of who you are and part of you living out the gospel in your life. And that is something that has to be almost like a lifelong or generational process. Anything that we do right now, while we're only a few weeks in, while we'll only be a year in, we'll only be, you know, a decade in, like, this change that I think a lot of people are feeling and really active in, is this is a long-term project. We're trying to change the way that a nation functions, and that's not something that just happens overnight. I wanted to read out of Isaiah chapter 58, and this is about true and false fasting, and the Lord says, you know, quoting people, "Why have we fasted and see you not? Why have we humbled ourselves and you take no knowledge of it?" And the Lord replies, "Behold, in the day of your fast you seek your own pleasure and oppress all your workers. Behold, you fast only to quarrel and to fight and to hit with a wicked fist. Fasting like yours this day will not make your voice be heard on high. And this is kind of that fear that people have looking like it was only a performative fast. Is such the fast that I choose a day for a person to humble himself? Is it to bow down his head like a reed and to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? Will you call this a fast and a day acceptable to the Lord? It goes on to say, is not this the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the straps of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke. Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house when you see the naked to cover him, and not to hide yourself from your own flesh? Then shall your light break forth like the dawn, and your healing shall spring up speedily. Your righteousness shall go before you, and on and on.
When we observe the history of oppression within the church, and therefore you may say, I want to distance myself from identifying with Christ, identifying as a Christian, a follower of Christ, what I would say is that actually it is the mission of the church. It is the work of the gospel not to, you know, again, not to like bail out from this planet or the people in like who have the most need. Anytime we're talking about salvation, we're not talking about a rocket ship past space into heaven. We're talking about restoring the planet. We're talking about restoring restoring humanity, and that is justice work. And I want to say, this is really, really critical. It's Christianity, and it's in fact Christ that gives us the picture of every individual who has infinite worth and who should be sacrificed for and loved without reservation or limit. And that is, yes, that's soteriological. In other words, yes, that's about like, you know, what we believe and life after, as N.T. Wright has said so famously, life after death, and the new heavens and the new earth. But that's also about doing kingdom work right now. So I just want to just add to that. Like, you're right, you can't have one without the other. And this is, those of you who are like frustrated by sometimes the lack of what you see as clear voices in the church, walking further from the church, because remember, Christ loves his church, Christ loves his body, like walking away from that, actually, that's the opposite reaction that we want to have. We want to lean into the message of Christ and his love for all people and the oppressed. So I just wanted to underscore that in what you were saying.
No, that's great. No, I think, yeah, I would say, agree with you just to say that any people who say that salvation is available for all but would continue to engage in practices that oppress other people socially or economically or in their everyday lived experience, I think that's just preaching an incomplete gospel, because we preach the gospel with our lives and with our actions, right, and what we do, right, as well as our words. And so we are effectively acting out an incomplete gospel and an incomplete picture of what salvation looks like. I just want to encourage us to be that generation that does this kingdom work, not for a day and not for a year, but for our entire lives, and passes it on to to the next generation,
right,
the continuing work.
Yeah.
It took hundreds of years to get to where we are now, and I think it's great that people are taking immediate action now, but I'm going to do this one thing and then go back to the way that I was living before.
Yeah. Yeah. And if I could talk about, like, I really think, and this is, I know that these conversations are hard to, like, I don't know if many of you take notes around these or whatever, but like, I think as, you know, as I was hearing you talk about this, it I think it was in maybe some audio that we listened to, Kate, I can't remember, but we've certainly been talking about it through Ecclesiastes as well. I think that, just kind of what, so how do you do that, right? How do you avoid And this is something I've been so frustrated with, kind of in just kind of the modern era, not even in our current moment, but just broadly. And it's a risk when you're like even dealing with like wisdom literature, right? But, which is to say, like, it's like moralizing, right? It's falling into cliches or these kind of empty phrases or sentences that it's just these moralizing statements. I mean, so to Kate's observation, like, how do we engage in like this long-term good work? And I think that as I've been thinking about this, not even recently, but for many years, I would just encourage you to reduce the distance between yourself and those in need in the community that you occupy. And that's where I think, we heard this in the audio somewhere, I heard, be proximate, right? Reduce the distance between yourself, the moral distance, the psychological distance, like the physical distance between yourself and the communities in which you occupy. And that, like, that kind of, the particularity of Christ, that's something that's so beautiful about Christianity. Christ is particular. He's in a specific place and time. He says and does very specific things at a specific time. And it's in that very peculiar particularity that the universal cosmic God exists. And we are called to engage in that very specific particularity as well. So those of you who are struggling with like, okay, so what is the right way to move forward? This may sound like it's in opposition to some of the other things I've been saying. So on the one hand, yes, like it's an act of love to spend time and energy reading and thinking about these issues. But really also we just need to be in it, in the world, with people in need, doing good work, and that's when things begin to clarify, right? Like, okay, so whatever, like, then that's when you come across like a program that needs, you know, additional funding that you want to like put your time and energy into. That's when you come across like a local policy at a city level that you're like, this needs to change, and you become an advocate for it. It happens naturally as an outworking of your closeness to those in need. And that's something that we're all called to be like working on all the time. And I'm not trying to be preachy about that. I hope it doesn't feel that way, because all of us struggle with like how to give more time and give time well. And I get that. But I think that proximation like allows us to like really invest in a way that allows long-term meaningful, solidarity. Right.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely right. And I thought of something while you were talking about just getting out there and getting into the community. And that is, that the generation of people who are, I don't know, kind of really active on this issue, I think multiple generations are, but I really indeed, hear a lot from young people and younger people on social media. And I would just caution anybody who is using social media as the platform to receive news and to communicate with others, if you are spending more time on social media reposting memes about racial reconciliation and oppression than you are being out in the community doing what Jeremy has just talked about, you may want to take a step back and rethink your plan on how you're going to do this work. It's not wrong to be an activist on social media, and it's not wrong to use it as a source to hear other people's opinions and to communicate. But I think we can get caught up feeling really fired up about something because of something you've seen, and then to fail to actually act out to do anything about it.
You're talking really about the really hard work of integrating like a moment, right, in our nation, or even like in our kind of, you know, personal experience, right? How to integrate that moment into a way of living. Mm-hmm. That's hard work.
It's finding a balance between consuming and producing.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think. Yeah. So I think we talked a lot about how we would begin to approach this subject.
That's the intro, right? That we just completed.
Yes, hour one completed. How do you talk to your family and your friends about things that are important to you?
Yeah, what if, particularly if they are, if they don't share your views?
Yeah, I think so. There's just a variety of points of disagreement, I think, that you will come across or you can come across. And I think in the past, perhaps, people have chosen silence instead of confrontation to maintain relationships, to not rock the boat too much. And I would say, like, moving forward, maybe silence should be used more judiciously than just keeping the peace. Sometimes I would say there is, like, the role of silence or not speaking on it, but less and less, really, because I think we've all had enough of that. So I think if we're wanting to create generational change, we have to be able to speak to people on issues that are important to us and that contribute to the oppression of others or, you know, how we feel that comes about. And some of you may encounter outright racism. Some people may, like some people in our congregation, have probably been the recipients of racist behavior. And a lot of times it'll be so subtle that I think sometimes we have the option of looking away or walking away. What I will say about confronting and talking to other people is to, again, look to Mark 11, the story of Jesus. He was self-controlled. He was purposeful. He was targeted in his approach. I think you can approach it with confidence, not a sense of superiority, but just confidence that you're ready to talk about it. And then also allow yourself in the relationship to continue to grow after that. Like, allow that other person to hear you and not, you know, that cancel culture shouldn't be part of this, or, well, I'm just not going to hang out with that person anymore until they completely agree with me. If you want to begin to change people's hearts and minds, it may be a longer conversation than just one confrontation. Finally, I just wanted to point out something that I think we can look to the story of Mark is that after he cleared out that area in the temple, he stayed and he taught. He stayed and he taught. And I think we can all see that as an example for ourselves. Like, once we start beginning to do that work in our relationships, if we feel that we have learned something that we can pass on to others, stay and teach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, really insightful about the value of staying, right? I think it's important as well. I'd be interested to know what you think about this, Kate, but I think it's important as well to, and I said this last week, I hold to this, I think it's important to listen and give people a chance to be heard. I don't conflate that with what Kate was, I think, critiquing in a sense, which is silence. Listening does not mean you listen and, like, okay, thanks, thank you for that, you know, see you next week. I mean, listen because we want to understand what is motivating, driving. We want to understand the thinking of those who do not share our views. And I think after listening and listening well, and listening with, like, a loving, again, yet Christ-oriented, justice-oriented heart, I think it's at that time that I think authentically sharing our concerns become all the more, I think, valid. For, like, they become all the more, like, they're more received. At once, they're more received, and also, I think at that point, we're really trying to engage people, seeing them as human beings. Because if you have had moments, in the, whether it's the last month or the last, you know, years, and I'm sure, you know, our center community, like, probably to the person has, I certainly have. If you've had moments where you're like, I can't believe I thought that way. I can't believe I was a part of that. Whatever it pertains to. I mean, don't you want people to, like, hear you out and in the right kinds of ways to, like, disagree with you and guide you in the way that apparently you were because you no longer hold the views that you held. So I think there's an act of, like, again, like, generosity, humility, but also kind of honesty in listening and then and then being willing to speak. Because, Kate, I affirm all that you said there.
Yeah, and I want to make sure that we're being clear on this. If you are encountering someone who is expressing beliefs that not everyone is valuable in the same way to God, or that not every human was created in the image of God, that's not really what we're talking about. That's outright wrong. That's incorrect. It's not biblical. It's not what Jesus taught. There's no truth in that at all. What we're really talking about is people who may differ in their approaches on what to do about it, or on whether or not the justice system works, or all of these issues that, like, relate to what actions we can take and what to do about it and the data that's available, and not so much, you know, this idea of, like, somebody who is 100% a racist.
I would imagine that most of the people that we are encountering are not a part of a white supremacy organization.
Right.
I would imagine that most of the people that we are encountering that you're referencing, whether they be family, friends, whatever, coworkers, would express a view that is concerning, but would say about themselves, no, of course I am not a racist.
Right.
And that's what I'm getting at, which is to say so I hear you when you say that view is not racist, or you are not a racist. Explain to me what you're thinking. Explain, like, help me to, I want to understand your thinking in on this. And that's where we begin to engage in the realm of ideas, which is a very, very powerful thing. And Paul in the New Testament talks all the time about the importance of essentially conforming our minds, right thinking, to Christ's likeness. And I think that work, in my experience, has not been best, like, resolved through debate, but it's certainly resolved through honest, transparent conversation where people feel the room to disagree. And I do think that that's how people end up moving and changing their way of thinking. So, yes, I agree with you. Like, when it comes to, you know, we're not talking about, like, white nationalists here. We're talking about people that would say about themselves, probably because they think this about themselves, I don't hold racist views. I don't have tendencies that are oppressive or whatever, biased or bigoted. And those people need to be heard out, and those conversations need to be had so that we can understand them and engage them, because we are all, hopefully, always more and more conforming our thinking to the likeness of Christ. And there's humility that needs to be included there, right? Like, what views do you hold or do I hold that are not actually not good, not helpful, not right, that hopefully, you know, through God's providence, grace, through his body at work, those are reformed, you know. So I guess that's what I was articulating there. So I think a few questions that may be useful in what it looks like to embody that particularness of Christ in our communities in a way that has longevity. And some of these are very inward-looking. So what actions do you rationalize? What behaviors in yourself or in others do you excuse? What righteous causes have you been slow to make sacrifices for? And I think beginning to look inwardly in this way, to wrestle with these and to allow these to catalyze us into action, not only as individuals, but as a community, I think is very, very useful here.
I know that Jeremy and I and John are united in our belief that the important work of building the kingdom is happening now. And to look at everything that you do, acting out for others, acting out against oppression, speaking up, doing work, is another stone and another building block in the kingdom of God. And so we want to encourage you to not be discouraged, but to keep building and to keep doing this good work, and talk about it amongst each other and support each other as a community.
Maybe as a final note, those of you who, and I think alluded to this, those of you who are rightly very bothered by the entirely checkered and often problematic history of the church, right, and how it's responded to these things, my encouragement is for you to lean into the identity of Christ and be a voice and a person who is doing the work that Christ has compelled us to do. Because actually, as angry or as frustrated or as, you know, maybe disturbed as you might be about the history of the church and the way that Christ's name has been misused or abused, to do nothing, to distance yourself from that identity, actually only allows those who want to misrepresent Jesus and the gospel to succeed. The best thing we can do is, in total love and shared identity in Christ, engage in solidarity with the widow, with the oppressed, with the poor, with those in need. That's the work of the gospel, you know, which begins with repenting of our own sins, accepting Christ's unconditional love for us, and then extending that unconditional love to others. So that would be my final encouragement for you, and to recognize that God has given you good work to do, and purpose, and meaning. And one of the reasons that so often we get angry at seeing tragedy and injustice is because we deep down know that this is not the world that God would have for his humanity. And so, therefore, we're compelled to act. We appreciate you. We love our church. I really love our community so much. I so enjoy our conversations and sort of minds and people that we have in our community. And be well this week.